Concord, and they have to travel to that meeting in their own personal vehicle to, you know, back and forth to those meetings. So that's the issue she wanted to discuss.
All righty, we'll add that down there. All righty, any other changes or adoptions?
I move that the agenda be approved with the added information on new business.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. O'Brien's absent. All righty, special presentation.
So if you, ladies and gentlemen, you can join me up front.
I'm guessing it's this one.
It is. If we can get Mr. Smith to join us up here, please. You get to be in the middle. Okay. So unfortunately, this is the time we're going to say goodbye to Jason. He's been here for 6.5 years, and we're delighted to have kept him that long. But in this phase of his career, it's great for him to have opportunities, and he's found a fantastic economic development opportunity with the Virginia Economic Development Partnership. So while we're sad to see him go, we're delighted for Jana and their two kids, growing family. They just had their second in June. Lola is not the only one anymore. Now she's got Bo to help her out. But with their growing family, they'll be able to move back closer to where they both work now in Richmond, and it'll make it much easier for the family. But we've been delighted with all the work he's done in Parks and Rec and in economic development, so we'd like to make a presentation. The Board of Supervisors takes pleasure in presenting a certificate of commendation to Jason K. Smith for services set forth in the following citation. For exceptional service, performance, and commitment to excellence while serving as Director of Parks and Recreation from 2012 to 2016, and as Director of Community and Economic Development from 2016 to 2018. Leading Parks and Recreation, Mr. Smith and his team made dramatic improvements in a program that was languishing in a good enough level of program effort. During the process, he earned a positive reputation for improving internal and external communications, redesigning workspaces to improve customer service and staff work environment, and building or strengthening community partnership. He implemented strong branding through creation of a new department logo and created an annual department report that served as a model for the new county report to citizens. Mr. Smith led project oversight of the massive Pleasant Grove House and Museum historical renovation. He and his staff implemented numerous new programs and projects, including pickleball, youth home school recreation activities, a pollinator garden, a county employee health fairs annually, and a comprehensive Pleasant Grove Park trail map, the trail signage project, and construction of an event stage at Pleasant Grove Park. In collaboration with JABA, Mr. Smith hosted community meetings to assess senior services needs, resulting in substantially expanded senior service offerings. As Director of Community and Economic Development, Mr. Smith's substantial outreach and partnership efforts continued to make a positive difference in our community. He implemented a strong business retention and expansion program, along with frequent business visitations by staff. He developed a monthly spotlight on business program and a countywide business directory to support existing local businesses. Mr. Smith organized multiple highly successful events, including a community business forum, two elected officials breakfast forums, several economic development town halls, and economic development breakfasts and luncheons, and multiple business appreciation events. He created a How to Start a Business in Flavanna packet, an associated resources listing, and website content to support the local business community and assist new businesses. Mr. Smith worked with the local planning district staff to develop an impressive area business marketing brochure, and he created and achieved approval for a one-of-its-kind Flavanna Shovel Ready Sites program. He co-created and chaired the Economic Development and Tourism Advisory Council to develop action options, marketing materials, expanded business community support. He also co-created the first ever Quad County Business Summit in October 2016 and served as chair for the 2017 event. Mr. Smith developed a county tourism logo, a top-notch tourism brochure, and a tourism strategic plan. Significantly, he also coordinated all aspects of the county's successful collaboration with the Virginia Electric Cooperative to accelerate expansion of broadband services to 85% of county residents. Mr. Smith's tireless efforts to improve and expand recreation opportunities, to attract new businesses for job creation, and to grow a more balanced tax base had a lasting positive impact and his efforts supported Flavanna County's goal to be a great place to live, learn, and play. Signed, John M. Sheridan, Chair.
All right, Mr. Nook.
So a few things to report. You all remember the dramatic first day of school last Thursday. Had a little incident on Highway 15. Fortunately, people like Mr. Carter, the bus driver, Terry Carter, and other community members who stopped to help kept everything safe that day. No children were injured, and all we had was a loss of a bus due to a mechanical failure. But obviously a very scary incident. Ms. Harris was a couple of cars behind that and saw the whole thing. But our school resource officers, Flavanna Fire and Rescue, the sheriff's office, the bus driver, Mr. Carter, the school staff, and then those community members that stopped made a really positive difference and made it an incident that could have been terrible and tragic into something that was just pretty dramatic. And some of those kids were on their first day of school, and when they got off the school bus at Central Elementary, Eric's wife was down there, and someone said, "Well, that was really scary." And some of the little boys got off the bus and said, "That was really cool." So, which is what I predicted the boys would say. But anyway, I'm thankful that no one was hurt that day. But big congratulations to Mr. Carter and to all the folks that stopped and helped, and then of course our emergency responders. And the insurance investigation, of course, will be ongoing. And then the schools will probably get insurance reimbursed to replace that unit. Don't forget the fair is going on. You've got a fair brochure there in front of you. The carnival starts tonight. The fair actually starts tomorrow. So you've got the carnival tonight and for the next 3 days after this. And then the fair Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in conjunction. So there'll be lots of fun going on at Pleasant Grove Park. So please take time to go out there. You can look at some of the posters that kids submitted for these designs for the cover. And then other winning designs or other ones that placed in the running inside the brochure here that has lots of cool posters from the kids made in the community. The farm museum dedication was hot and successful. There were a lot of people there, but man, it was hot. It was just blue blazes hot out there. And I didn't realize that the sun is perfectly setting in the afternoon to hit the front porch of that museum. So we're never having an event at 6 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon there ever again. But anyway, it was really really a nice event. There was, 150 or 200 people there, and it was a great event, well attended, and the weather was perfect other than just being a little warm. The Farm Museum is spectacular and really looks good. Appreciate all the hard work of staff, community members, Historical Society, and many community members and businesses who contributed to that effort. Mrs. Booker had asked before about coverage in our county for broadband coverage, and there's quite a bit of information already available on the web, so I'm just going to show you one of these items out there that anyone in the community can access. And so this is the website from CIT, that Community Investment. I can't read it on there, it's small. Anyway, CIT is a state-funded organization that helps localities investigate broadband and wireless opportunities and other electronic media type things. But they've got a website that pulls up, you can pull down to almost any locality and find out what the coverage areas are, and you can put it in a variety of different formats. So I'm going to pull up just our county. So pull up the county, and if you want to see like just cable wireline coverage, if you want to add DSL coverage, if you want to look at copper wire coverage, there's not much copper in Central Virginia at all. I'm going to shut a couple of these off so you can see there's where copper is. You can overlay it then with just fiber optic coverage, so some pockets in some areas that do have some fiber optic coverage. Fixed wireless, you know, none in our area, but surrounding us. We're hoping that potentially some of that wireless can be tapped off our broadband coverage that CVEC will be putting in. And then mobile wireless covers the entire area, but certainly not to a perfect degree in some areas, and depending on which carrier. There's 4G coverage. You can see some of these low areas down here in the southern part of County are really difficult to get coverage into. And then satellite coverage can cover the whole area, but it's not necessarily very good coverage. But if you look at underserved areas, there's where it shows what they think are strong, very severe underserved areas that aren't served by something one way or the other. So there's a pretty easy way for citizens or businesses to look and see what's available in their area, and they can do it in layers on there. So that's one of the tools that we add.
Well, go back to cable wireless, the first one. Okay.
So anyway, so it's a pretty good resource, and it's not perfect, but it's reasonably up to date. You know, usually only about a year behind on the data that gets loaded in there, and so it'll be a good tool for us as we start adding layers on with Central Virginia Electric Cooperative and how it can spread out. It should be on there. So I'll send you all that link, that hyperlink to that, so you can pull it up and look at it. But you can put drill down into it a lot of different ways. That's just one of the ways to use it. The Virginia Fire Service Board did approve the extension for the burn building grant. Remember that we were supposed to start construction by August of this year. They approved a one-year extension because when the bids came back, we only got one bid. It came back in as over $1 million. And so we asked for an extension because we need to work with that contractor to try to get the price down and look at what alternatives and options there are. And the Fire Service Board approved that. So we have to start construction by next August. Still the same grant, $480,000, can be used for certain things, and then a new project completion date of 2020. I don't think they'll do this endlessly, and we don't need it necessarily endlessly, but we had to, because the bid came in so late because it was so high, we had to start working on what are the alternatives and options rather than just throw $1 million bill on the table. And so we have a bunch of those. By the end of this month, we'll have a full range of alternatives and options to the board, and then we'll get the project manager come brief you, and then you can make some selections. A couple new staff members coming on board, or already on board. Donald Pitcock starts in facilities in September, in early September. He'll be a senior center aide to work with Faith Stewart with our senior programs. So we'll be glad to have him on board. And Ms. Holly Steele in the back here, Holly Steele. Holly just joined us. She's has a master's degree in natural resources, planning, natural resources, from that place down south. That's not UVA, from Virginia Tech, and an undergrad degree as well. We're delighted to have Holly on board. She's from Amherst County area, but we'll be moving up to this area to get settled into her new job. She started on Monday.
Did I read Amelia in there also?
Amelia County, not Amherst.
She's a Raider. I mean, I don't know what all that is.
Amelia County, right. So welcome aboard. And then Carrie's maintenance shop has finally been demolished. You approved some money for that a couple years back, and it's been demolished now. We're working with Virginia Department, Forestry, to put their maintenance or a storage building shop there where they can put bulldozers and things like that to be able to do forest fire work and things. And that also helps us during disaster preparedness. And so they'll be leasing some of that empty space there to put their building on so that that equipment's more accessible to us.
Is that Chuck Wright?
Pardon? Chuck Wright.
Wright, yes, ma'am. Yeah. He's the only one that's in the building. Is anybody? He's on
the bar, right? No, this is a state. This is not for him. This is for the state. Right.
So okay. It could be the guy from Louisiana.
We've been working with a whole bunch of folks from the state, including Ed Zimmer, to make this happen. Mr. Payne's office is reviewing the agreement. And essentially what they'll do is they'll long-term lease a piece of land, come in, put that steel-sided building out, put their equipment in, and because you've got an accessible driveway right to Highway 15 already, it works out kind of perfect for them, but also gets equipment located in our county that we may need during the disaster. So it's a great
thing. And keeps out of the weather.
The food bank has been completed now, too. You can see that the right here in the center of this picture, you can see the joining pathway or the joining hallway between their buildings has been completed. Our staff put that in and finished it up. the, they put the covers over the AC units on the backs of the buildings to keep them lasting longer. And they've moved all of the things out of our public works buildings. So I've got the agreements here, just waiting for them to come sign, and we'll hand them a check for $11,520 when they come sign the paperwork. So we're delighted to have that project finished. It's obviously such a good thing for our community to have this great food bank in the community, but also we picked up that extra storage building that we can use for public works right there at the maintenance shop. Just a note about the meals tax referendum. Mr. Payne and I have been going back and forth talking about this stuff, and he's been researching different laws about the meals tax referendum. You know, we had talked about potentially doing some community town halls and talking about, you know, like the briefing we had given you when you said, yes, go ahead with the referendum, like this kind of thing with what it's about, what the questions are, what the pros and cons are, all those kind of things. Well, based on state law, I'm not sure we can necessarily do it to that degree. We could do an advertisement at the polling places, but it can only be the question and up to 500 words, and it has to be completely neutral. You can't advocate a position. There's a bunch of the language here, so Mr. Payne can chime in on what he thinks we can do, but anything that we put out there has to be in neutral language and has to be written by slash approved by the county attorney, which is a little different than what we were planning, because we were certainly going to try and talk about pros and cons. I'm not sure we can necessarily do it that way now.
This is a very peculiar statute. Obviously, somebody in the General Assembly didn't like the kind of electioneering that some counties have done, some localities have done in connection with referendum. The thrust of this is that if the county wants to have, in effect, a publication about the issues on the referendum, there are limits on how you can do it. And my reading of this is that that's probably limited to what goes to the polling places. But my recommendation is that we comply with the statute for everything we do, because it's we don't want to transgress it. Now, there is one good thing, and that is this statute, again, this is a peculiar statute. It says that if we violate it, it doesn't invalidate the result of the referendum. So I'm not sure what the remedy is if we violate it, but it does say that. The other thing that's peculiar about this is that it limits the information you can disseminate in this fashion to 500 words. But what's really peculiar about it is it's required to be written by the county attorney. So
that'll cost more than 500 words.
I was going to say, it sounds like an attorney wrote that.
So, what it amounts to is it needs to be neutral explanation. And I think you can talk about pros and cons, but it has to be, you know, to the extent possible, in a neutral fashion. So obviously, you know, you could say your meal will cost more by 4% or 3% or wherever you adopt, but that money will go to tend to relieve pressure on the real estate tax. Say things like that.
So the presentation, anything we plan on using for like town hall meetings where we can inform people and answer questions and things, we'll get that screened by the county attorney first, and then I'll send it back all to you. So you still want us to go forward with doing some briefings and just getting set up around the county, but we'll have it chopped and reviewed first. The briefing that we did before for you is pretty neutral all the way through. It's just plain facts until you get to the pros and cons page, and then it just lists some pros and some cons. But we'll take a look at it and see if it's suitable.
I have to say, I read the Flu Review article that they did on the meals tax issue, and I thought they did a very good job of explaining what the issues are.
All right. My next question, if we need to wait till later, that's fine. But now, this is when we're as a group. If we have something individually, are we under the same rules?
I would think that you would have the same people at all the town halls. I wouldn't do one.
If I talk to people,
it's kind of hard to say that, because this is such a peculiar statute. But I think if it were were up to me, what I would say is we ought to have a presentation on it, one, you know, in some form or another, a presentation. And even ask questions, you answer the questions, but you do it in the most neutral way possible. So if they say, "Isn't this going to cost me a lot more money?" The answer is it'll cost you 4% more money or 3% or whatever you decide to put on it.
My biscuit's going from $1.99 to $2.09.
Well, that's right. If you go out, you take
$2.07.
You take your lady love out to anniversary dinner and you spend $100 on dinner, it'll cost you $104. You know, you could say something like that because that's simple arithmetic. But you know, saying, "Oh, we need to get into the 21st century and you know, we're hanging around in the past and we need to be modernized and stuff like that," I think that kind of statement is what's intended to be eliminated from this sort of thing.
Yeah, but it says through the entire statute, it refers to governing body. So individually, we might have some things in leeway. But anyway, whatever we do as a organization, we're going to go through the attorney's office to make sure we follow state code and then let you know what the plan is and see if you buy off on that. But I would certainly hope that we would be available several times between now and the November election to answer questions for folks.
You notice in subsection B here, the materials or advertisements shall not advocate the passage or defeat of the referendum question.
Okay.
That's it.
Yes, sir.
I don't know who had a bad referendum in their General Assembly district, but somebody did, obviously.
Thank you very much.
Well, anyway, just a heads up. And then you've got regular meetings come up in September and October. I don't know of any work sessions then. We will be having a work session in the first meeting in December, December 5th or December 6th. So we'll see. We have the board budget calendar for that. We'll show you. I think that's probably when your first work session is. And that would be kind of a budget planning session, and then the school system would be here to do their pre-budget discussion. So I think that's the first meeting in December. You'll have a 4 o'clock meeting and then a work session that evening. Any questions I can answer for the board?
No questions? Thank you very much, sir. All righty, we'll now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wish to address the board at this time, please come to the witness chair, state your name, address. Keep your comments directed to the board, and you have 5 minutes to speak. Does anyone wish to speak at this time? I will now close the first round of public comment. Public hearing, SUP 1803, Virginia Electric and Power Company. Mr. Robinson.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. This is a special use permit request from Virginia Electric and Power Company, and it's identified as application SUP 1803. This is a request to construct an electric transmission substation. The property is located near Reno Bluff, identified as tax map 58A57, which is within a rural residential planning area, and this project falls under our definition of a major utility. As you can see by the definition on the screen, the electrical substations is specifically mentioned, and that's what this project consists of. The project will involve construction of substation equipment enclosed by a fence that will be 12 feet in height, and then there will be a gravel access road from the main road to the site. And as you'll see on some of the maps, this project is proposed within right-of-way that Dominion Power already has in the area. So this is the location of the parcel within Fluvanna County at the Red Star. Down here at the bottom, you can see it's basically near the county line at Reno Bluff. And this is an aerial image showing the site here with this Red Star. And the right-of-way that Dominion has kind of runs through this area here. And you can see in the surrounding area, there's a lot of vegetation or wooded areas. This is the site plan submitted with the application, overlaid on top of the aerial. So to get your sense of direction here, Route 15 is here on the screen. And then the existing driveway that serves the current owner of the property comes through here. And it gravel road will be extended, and the substation site will be back here. And then this is just a closer view of the proposed site plan for the property, the exterior fence, and then all the equipment within within the fence and the road access road. So this is what the entrance looks like from Route 15, and then again, this is just a private entrance that serves the property owner. And this is a this is not the actual site, but just a rendering of a previous project that done. Anticipated that this site will look similar to this. And these are some photographs to give you an idea of what the transmission right-of-way looks like and the view that would be seen from the side of the surrounding area. This is looking uphill towards Fort Union. And this is looking in the opposite direction towards Greenwood Boulevard. And as you can see, based on the topography, it's kind of hilly out there. There's existing trees, so for that reason, it's not expected that the substation will be visible. This is just another view looking west towards Route 15. So to conclude, this is a special use permit request for a major utility. The project will be located within existing right-of-way. The project at this time appears to meet all of our county code requirements. At their meeting on July the 10th, the Planning Commission recommended approval by a vote of 5-0. Staff doesn't anticipate any adverse impacts, but minimally, there will be some minimal noise from the substation equipment. That would be the most adverse impact we could possibly expect. So that concludes my presentation. I can try to answer any questions you might have.
Alrighty, are there any questions from the board?
Can we see the condition?
Yes.
The site is 72 acres, is that correct?
27.
No.
The overall property is 73 acres, but they're 73, but they're going to buy a portion of it from the current owner.
And how does our ordinances allow that to happen, that they can cut that 27 acres out of the 73? Is that just, what kind of subdivision is that?
I think we're going to treat it as a utility lot.
Oh, okay.
But that's a good question.
I've got three more under that. Is it 10? Is it 7?
No, 7.
Just 7.
That's why I thought it was 10. Thank you.
The applicant also has a brief, but it's essentially the same information with some pictures that we put in the staff brief. So they're here in case you want to ask any questions, but we didn't think you needed to see both of them necessarily.
Would anybody like to hear from the applicant? Or we're good? All righty.
I can make the motion.
All right, well, hearing no other questions, we'll now open the public hearing. Please keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to this matter at this time? Seeing none, I will now close the public hearing. Any other questions? You can make that motion, Ms. Booker.
All right, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 1803, request to construct a major utility with respect to 27 acres of tax map 58. Section A, Parcel 57, if approved, subject to the 7 conditions listed in the staff report.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right, we'll now move forward with our action matters. First up is J, authorization to apply for a Louisa County conditional use permit. Mr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a part of our ongoing Simon Crossroads Water project, we found out that we needed to apply for conditional use permit and leave in Louisa County as the project crosses two parcels in Louisa County that are owned by the same owner, and roughly in the Crescent Inn area, I believe. So Louisa County's Board of Supervisors has agreed to waive those fees, but we are asking the board for permission to make the application in anticipation of a public hearing held in Louisa County by the Planning Commission and Board of Supervisors this fall for approval. And Mr. Stevens is here to answer any technical questions.
Any questions? That's pretty cut and dry. Thank you very much, sir. All right, do we have a motion?
I move to authorize staff to make application for conditional use permit from Louisa County Board of Supervisors in regards to two parcels of the Zions Crossroads Water Project that are located in Louisa County.
Second. Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. K, FY18 Facilities Budget Transfer.
Sir Chair, members of the board, the action item I have before you is FY18 Facilities Budget Transfer Request. Fiscal year 18 facilities budget was overexpended by $75,000. This is a revision to what was in the package. It was originally $63,000, but if you remember, Mr. Nichols was talking about the payment to the FCSS for the storage building down there. The board approved some Board of Supervisors contingency funds in 18, and now that we're executing that, and it was in 18, we're going to put those dollars to fiscal year 18 as well. So that brings the facility's over budget amount from 63 to 75. Just kind of discussing some of the over expended items and some things that were outside of the norm. Speaking with Mr. Wayne Stevens, some of those items below there are some of the primary reasons that the facility's budget was over expended. Some of those items could have possibly come forward for a CMR request, but they were not. But I guess the positive to that
most of those were CRM requests.
They could be. I mean, some of them may be small, but
some of the HVACs were in the sheriff's office. Certainly. I mean, the some of those definitely came through our CRMs. They just
they come through the CRM. They wouldn't have been in the facility.
Good point.
Thank you, Mr. Stevens.
I probably should have applied for a capital reserve maintenance fund money for at least those first two, because those are the projects that we actually had planned to do.
That we had.
It sort of came up, and I don't know, I misjudged whether we're going to be able to squeeze all that stuff in or not. And we're not.
So none of these coming from?
None of these were CRMs.
No, they were not.
You're right. It could have, but it.
Right.
And that's why we need to use some of
the capital reserve. Yes.
We're not pulling new money. We're just moving money.
We're not. So Mr. Stevens oversees multiple budgets. He oversees the public works budget, the general services budget, and the convenience center budget. And if you see below there, the combined under budget of those three departments was $78,000. So we're requesting a transfer of funds from those departments to offset the overexpended amount of the facilities budget for all those projects that need to be done. So we're not asking for new money. We're staying within the budget, but
we're asking you to tell things to stop breaking.
Next year.
So we're requesting a budget transfer of $76,000 to the facilities budget. This will show what the facilities budget increases from, and this will show what those three budgets are decreasing to. Like I said, within the same budget, it's just increasing one, decreasing three.
Just moving totals around.
Yep.
Any questions for anyone?
And then this is the motion for the board.
Mr. Weaver, you got any questions?
No.
All righty.
Staying within the budget.
All right. Do we have a motion?
Sure. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $15,500 from the FY18 Public Works budget, $57,000 from the FY18 General Services budget, and $3,500 from the FY18 Community Center budget, and transfer $76,000 to the FY18 Facilities budget for additional facilities projects and unforeseen maintenance costs.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Thank you, sir. L, middle school up, unspent debt proceeds. Mr. Dahl.
Okay. So let's see here. So back in 2015, the board approved $5.1 million for the middle school project. It was also approved by the board at that point to fund that project with debt proceeds. The project included the things on the screen, HVAC for the middle school, main gym, annex gym, roofing, electrical upgrades, ceiling and LED lighting, gym floor, plumbing, blah, blah, blah. Like I said, the board supervisors and the school board approved the debt issuance. The debt was issued to the VPSA, Virginia Public School Authority, in October 2015. And the original project intent is basically now complete. They've been working on it through multiple summers and winter breaks and everything. And the project was, majority of the project was done through train. So prior to us going to the energy project as well, they're going to kind of include some of the project that they oversaw for the HVAC and some of the ceiling and LED lighting. They're going to kind of include that into our energy project savings as well. And that was part of the energy performance contract. So right now, as I said, the schools and the project, the original project's basically complete. So we have about $100,000 of unspent proceeds. About $73,000 of that is principal proceeds, and then over the years we've been gaining interest on the amount that's sitting outstanding. So we basically need some direction from the board what to do with those remaining funds. I've been going back and forth with our bond council, with the VPSA bond council, to determine what can be done. So basically the two options are, one, the board can just keep the funds there, and the schools can, you know, bring forward and determine that they may have other middle school related projects that they want to use those funds for. Anything that middle school related on the middle school, part of the middle school. And we'll kind of get into a little caveat of that later on too. Or secondly is, per the bond documents, we can also reimburse ourselves for interest expense that we've paid out up to this point. So we basically just would requisition the remaining $100,000, and it just goes back in the general fund. So those are the two main options for the project. When I spoke to the schools regarding, okay, well, if they wanted to do some additional middle school projects, they came up with the items right there, $75,000 for flooring replacement in the office and library, $25,000 for construction of a vestibule in the main entrance, kind of a security entrance kind of sign-in thing for that building. And obviously option two is you can return the funds to fund balance. One alternate request that the school brought forward, and I'll kind of talk about this, is they were requesting that we use some of the funds to do abatement and some upgrades and fixes at the S.C. Abrams building. Originally, when we found out that we had about $100,000 in bond proceeds left, because the Abrams building is on the parcel of the middle school, it's kind of connected to the middle school by like breezeways and passways, and you know, middle school students, you know, may go there. We had originally, you know, asked bond council if we could use it directly for that and requisition the funds from those proceeds. They said because it was not the middle school, basically it wasn't the middle school address. The S.C. Abrams Academy had an address of their own, couldn't use it for that. If the board decides that they want to take those funds back in and reimburse themselves for the interest expense, they can do whatever they want with, obviously once the money becomes county general fund money, the board can determine whatever they'd like to do with those funds. So like I said, the school's alternate request was to be able to use those funds if they come back to the general fund, come forward at another meeting to do some upgrades and abatement, and some abatement that's already been done, and some necessary flooring at the S.C. Abrams building. And Mr. Winkler and Mr. Stribling are here, and so they can answer any questions to that, the middle school, or the two options for the middle school, and I can answer any questions if you want to, you know, if you have any regarding return to fund balance or any other options there may be.
Right. Are there any questions from anyone?
I have a question.
Sure.
Can it go back and get pay off principal on any of our debt?
Well, okay.
Not until 2024.
Yeah, you can't pay off anything until 2024. So we could take the money in, and then in 2024, you're basically putting into the general fund, you're sitting on it for, you know, 6 years, and you can pay off principal at that point. But that is the earliest without
And getting interest.
Yep.
And we don't, we can't get any, can't use it to pay other debts because we don't have any debts that are paid, that we can pay off.
We prepaid everything we can. We refunded, refinanced all of our debt to about the lowest interest rates we can get right now. I think we've got a few old school related debt that the interest rates are maybe around 4%, but those were refunded a long time ago, advance refunded, and so we cannot do anything to pay those off early. But I think they may have like 2-3 years left on some of them. So we're pretty much, as far as paying off any additional debt, we're pretty much kind of locked and loaded where we are right at this moment.
You use it on a middle school project or put it back in the bank.
Yep.
And then once you put it back in the bank, you all can decide whatever you want to do with it. It stays in the fund balance or use it for another purpose.
So we can take it back, and if we decide, we can do that abatement process, because I think they got parts of the Abrams building that are unusable right now, two or three rooms. But I'm sure we can get the...
I'm sure you can get the schools up to...
Yeah, that's
I would ask for the sequence of all that.
Gentlemen, if you would make your way to the microphone. Mr. Winkler.
In all honesty, the third request right there is the one that's the top priority for me. We do. We have an entire room and possibly two that we've abated from an asbestos standpoint. The floor started caving in, and I guess that would be the southwest side of the Abrams building a few years ago. We started getting air quality concerns, so we've done some mold tests. We realized when we went in there to try to... alleviate some concerns with the mold. There was also some asbestos issues at that particular point. We have students in that building every day. We have faculty and staff in that building every day. We realized that we didn't have any choice in the abatement. So we pushed our luck, if you will, in hoping that we could use these funds because the Abrams building was part of the middle school complex. In all honesty, when it was the high school used that as if it were a part of it, as it's a different room. If you'd go in behind it, there's two other buildings that are actually considered part of the middle school complex. It's just the Abrams building is separate. So we've done the asbestos abatement. We have not shored up any other aspects of the flooring. That room is completely non-usable right now. It is literally zoned off in plastic, and we have an asbestos crew that's doing some final abatement work. So that would be what we would be looking at. You know, lately I'm in a kind of a bargaining kind of mood. There's $100,000, you keep the interest, but let me fix Abrams is what I'm trying to say. I'll gladly answer any questions. These other things are priorities, but they can come over the years. These other two items up here through the CIP is what I'm hoping.
And then one thing I would like to correct on the whole thing, I noticed this the other day when I was reading it at the house.
Yes.
The gym locker room renovation.
Yes.
We did not do the gym locker room.
We did renovations within there, some restroom facilities within
the restroom.
We opted.
Eventually, we're going to have to come back and do lockers.
Not 100%.
We did not do 100% of those renovations. We didn't necessarily have the funds.
I'm letting these guys know that that's something that y'all may come back later on when we will need to do something to that.
At some point, yes.
Other questions?
Well, $75,000 wasn't in any your budget, was it per se? I mean, it was not an identified place in any of your budget.
You mean the $75,000 that's remaining there with the other right. 26 and change in interest? No, sir. It's actually been in that middle school project all along with that 5.1 original. Neither was the asbestos abatement. We did some abatement within Abrams a couple of years ago, or I think it was last year actually. Down on the lower floor, and it was just out of need. We had some airborne asbestos happening. Those 9x9 tiles started popping on us. But there's asbestos in the pipes, in the floor tiles. So no, sir, that was not in our budget. That was not in our budget. It remains in that middle school project budget. It's sitting there right now. And it can continue to stay there, but the problem is if it stays there, we can't use it to do the asbestos to help with Abrams. I can do the other things if you leave it there, but I can't do the third thing. And that's really what we need to do.
But he can't do any of these without your approval.
Because that's correct.
The dollars were originally identified for that middle school project. Because the EPSA says you can do additional middle school work with that dollars, you'd have to say yes to approve that. If you wanted to do the orange alternative, that school's alternative request on there, you cannot do it tonight. Okay? You can only say one or two. And if you say two, we'll come back later on, because we have to keep these things separate, because you're repaying interest, and then you're making a separate decision to fund something the schools wants. So we don't want any nexus of those two.
So I think what they're saying is they'd like for us to do number two, and then have the ability to come back to us and ask for number three later.
Does the county attorney have any concerns about doing it that way?
It's bond counsel.
Bond counsel says that bond counsel knows what he's talking about.
Any other questions from anyone here?
Well, then they would come back with
CIP. Right, they'd have to come back with a
CIP.
Well, it's a request. The budget's already approved.
They'd just come back with a maintenance request.
It would be a maintenance.
They wouldn't have enough money in their CRM. They just ask for additional money for their CRM so they can do this, or just a maintenance request. It would just be a separate request. It wouldn't have to be a capital project, because it's not creating new infrastructure or new functionality.
So basically, all you're doing, if you do option number two, you're basically taking the funds back into the general fund, and it's going to basically, at the end of the fiscal year, it's going to go into unassigned fund balance.
That's what your bond rate.
At the end of fiscal year 19. And then if you decide you want to do the orange request within the same fiscal year, you're basically going to be doing a supplemental appropriation to a CIP project coming from unassigned fund balance. So it's kind of an in and out, basically, in the same fiscal year.
But is it easier to do it another way?
No.
I think for transparency, for the is over the $50,000, it's a CRM amount typically.
No.
Right?
CRM can be anything above $50,000 too. It's generally, the reason we kind of put a distinction there is because we wanted you to raise the CIP floor up to $50,000. But CIPs are generally, and most specifically, for new functionality, new structures, like a building of a ball stadium or a new school or things like that. The stuff that's on MRR, the capital reserve maintenance fund, and then any of our maintenance, repair, and renovation projects are all things that are doing to maintain what we've got, either an upgrade, a fix, asbestos mitigation. Those are all maintenance things. So it doesn't have to be a CIP project per se. You can run it either just as an extra maintenance project or put the dollars in their CRM budget and let them then put in a CRM request to expend it. That would be the cleaner way to do it. But again, it's not tied to tonight's action.
And if you go with option two, exactly the last thing that Mr. Nichols said would be what I would come forward with. I would come forward with a capital reserve maintenance request for additional funds be placed in specifically for the asbestos abatement and repairs at Abrams. And I would try to do that next month.
Right.
Thank you very much.
So the construction of the vestibule in the main entrance, you don't think it's necessary?
Oh, it's not that I do not think it's necessary. I know that asbestos and those airborne particles take priority over that. We'll continue to pursue safety grants. We can put those in. We need some vestibules in some of our other schools.
Yes.
I mean, there's always safety concerns. Mm-hmm. So maybe wrap that into a future CIP. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
All right. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Thank you all. Thank you.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve option two for the middle school's project unspent BPSA debt proceeds in the amount of approximately $99,300 plus interest secured, whereby the county will.
Read number two.
Reimburse the county general fund for BPSA interest expense payments made.
Second.
Had a motion made by Mr. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. M, FY20 budget calendar, Mr. Dahl.
I have one more up here. Okay, so before you, every year, we're about maybe a meeting or two late in getting to see, we try and get it to you in July, but this is coming to you for approval of the FY20 budget calendar. Not a whole lot has changed since last. Some of the major differences are, one, so right there, if you look in January, normally the meeting would be on January 2nd and the 16th, but because of the way the 2nd is and county staff and office buildings are closed on the 1st, and then even the week before there's a lot of closures, we may be coming forward, and I think Mr. Nichols may be coming forward for some BOS regular meeting changes for January, moving those meetings to the 9th and the 23rd versus the 2nd and the 16th.
So just a note, this year you changed the first January meeting because it was on the first or second or third, and you moved it a week back. But then we ended up having two meetings back to back, you know, 1 week and the next week. So we just proposed here to move both meetings. Instead of the second and the 16th, just move it to the 9th and the 23rd. And then you've got 2 weeks until your next February meeting, too. So there's some more gaps in between. Makes it a little bit easier.
You've got 5 weeks to
get. Yes, right.
Some other changes, I'm not sure if the school board, if they approved your budget calendar for the dates that are out there.
They did not.
Okay.
They did not, but I know there was a date, I'm sorry, Mr. Dahl.
No, it's fine.
I know there was a date you were discussing early on from a move date. I don't see that up as earlier than that.
Oh, that's the November one. That's the one that we sent the emails back and forth.
Yes. Yes.
Work session on
December.
Is that supposed to be December
5th?
December
5th, kind of my
joint.
Kind of,
okay. That's 7 o'clock work session, yes. December 5th. We moved it out in November where it wasn't
originally. Would that be a joint work session?
No.
Okay.
That'll just be him presenting his budget outlook like last year, and then county staff will be talking about general budget things.
One
joint work session is not until February.
That's right. One of the other changes, so right now, under anything related to schools, regarding the school board work session, superintendent's budget, and their public hearings, we have TBD on there right now, so once they come forward and they officially approve it, we'll update this and hopefully just leave the dates where they are and take off TBD, but if not, we can do
that,
some review.
That 6 months away would be good.
I hope we will.
We got plenty of time.
Some of the only other changes we have this year is going to be a reassessment year, so we've got some additional advertisements to do to let the public know what the equalized tax rate will be. So we have to set forward a tax rate a little earlier in this budget process like we have done in the past, just because there's some public hearing and some advertising requirements for the equalized tax rate 30 days prior to adopting the budget, and then we still have to have a public hearing and advertise for the fiscal year 20 budget also. So those are some of the major changes. So I think last year we approved the budget on about the second week of April. This year we're moving it back one more week, so it's going to be the third week of April. So those are the major.
Checked with the commissioner.
It's the second meeting in April.
We checked with the commissioner and the treasurer, because those are the ones that affects. Because
all we have to be done is by the end of April, and that's why we.
So previous.
I know we had a loophole a couple of years back.
Last year we were 1 week early when we had the budget adopted.
I know one year we could do it late enough that the treasurer and the commissioner had an issue with how fast they could get their stuff turned over. And turned
just
over.
Has to be done by the end of April.
Right.
Yeah. And just from us, I mean, we're kind of locked into the date that we can do it. I mean, unless the board wants to like set an advertised tax rate sooner, which when you get the Super Bowl and you get the county administrator's budget on February 6th, I mean, you're already having to set a rate on February 27th. So if you have to do it a week earlier, that's really why we have to have the budget adoption on at the earliest it can be is April 17th.
But again, as long as you adopt in April, there's no problems with the commissioner or the treasurer. Even if you adopt in the first part of May, which we've done in the past, it can still accomplish. It's just a tighter time frame for them.
I always
try to do it in April, and that's why we set it the third week of April, so you still have the fourth week of April in case you don't adopt. That's what that last April 24th is on there. That's an if-needed meeting. In case you don't adopt on the 17th.
And last fiscal year, like I said, since we didn't have any reassessment, we could adopt 1 week sooner. But with the reassessment and the advertising requirements, this is kind of what it needs to be.
So really, the only substantive change as far as sequencing is the January meeting dates. That's your regular meeting dates. We'll have that on your next agenda for your approval so we can publish that. Now, you're going to adopt your regular meeting calendar in January, but we want you to make this change before then, so it's public, so it's informing the public, too.
Are there any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the fiscal year 20 budget calendar as presented.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We'll now move forward with appointments. MC, Board, Commission, Committee appointments. Mr. Nichols, Blue Mountain Partnership for Aging and Palmyra Area Revitalization Committee.
Right, and
We've got one candidate for reappointment for the FPA for partnership rating. That's Mr. Putnam. He's actually in the Columbia District, and that it's a Columbia District appointment. And then four people that have signed up requesting positions on the park, and there's actually five positions. We just don't have any other candidates right now. But these four folks have been pretty much involved all along the way. We're delighted to have them put their names on the list to continue the work. So
I'm impressed with the resumes and everything.
Absolutely.
Oh, lots of talent.
So if whenever someone wants to read the motion, if you'll just read off the screen here and fill in the names on the various lines as you go down.
Can't pronounce the name.
Kelly, do you have it?
Oh, shoot, I forgot to bring it with me.
We asked for phonetic spellings today, so I would say...
I got it.
You say Mr. and Mrs. K.
Mr. and Mrs. K.
Okay.
All right, let me take your shot. Breckawecki.
Our area revitalization committee, the following committee members, Chris...
Kravetsky.
And Cornell Kavesky, Jay Pulaski, and Jackie Blaine.
Jan Pulaski.
And Pelmar.
Jane Pulaski, Jackie Blaine. That's for the Revitalization Committee. For the Fluvanna Partnership for Aging, reappoint Mr. Curtis Putnam. And did I...
That's it.
We'll incorporate those dates that are on the screen into the motion.
Okay. To begin that term immediately, will end June the 30th, 2020.
Mr. Putnam is 2022.
And Mr. Putnam is 6/30/2022.
Well, do we have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver.
Are those people here?
Yes.
I want to see their faces. Oh,
yes, I know. They're parked right up front.
I knew they were here for a reason when they didn't get up for the public hearing or the public comment.
So, what's the pronunciation right,
Let's get the vote done, Ms. Booker. All right, do I have a second?
A second.
We have a motion made by Ms. Booker with a little bit extra, and a second by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now, Mrs. Booker,
now, I'd like to be able to...
Absolutely, ma'am. I was just trying to get done before I forgot where
name.
I was.
How do you pronounce?
My name?
Pavlaka.
I was all over that one. The other one, I apologize, I butchered.
Kravetsky?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out where the CH... I'm still trying to figure out where the CHE went to it.
I just say, hey, neighbor.
Next time, put it up phonetically.
Oh, y'all are his neighbors?
I forgot it. I'm sorry.
Can we get a moment of silence for sure?
I'm sorry. I empathize with them, too.
Thank y'all for keeping Mr. Nichols in line. All righty. So, we've made it through that one. There are no presentations, so now we will move to the consent agenda. In minutes of August 1st, 2018. Accounts payable report June 2018. P, accounts payable report July 2018. Q, school resource officer, SRO incentive grant. R, policy 2.8.5, employee learn and earn program, Mr. Nichols. All right, what are we pulling? I heard my man start grabbing his book. That's why I started.
Right. I'm going to talk about basically two here, O and P. Accounts payable.
Yes, sir.
I brought up to Mr. Nichols the other day about the CSA. And as you know, with the Central Virginia Regional Jail, we have representatives for each one of those counties. And it's my suggestion that we look at doing CSA the same way. In other words, in this right here, we had like $266,000 in CSA this one month. And the following month, it was something like $220,000. And if you can imagine, build a building where all five counties can put that together. And Steve said there's some legal matters, but I'd like to have permission that you allow me to speak to at least two of the board members in the jail board just to get their reaction to what something like that might be.
I mean, I don't see how it can hurt anything.
You said to put all CSA money together?
Well, to build our own building.
You're talking about a community.
Yes, just like the jail board in that sense.
Just like the Orange Central Virginia Regional Jail.
Which is not a jail, a treatment facility.
Right, I mean.
Outpatient, whatever. But there are some laws now that make that problematic, but I know there are also bills that went into to the legislatures last year to try to change that. It just hasn't changed yet, but it's a good idea for an ongoing discussion with counties.
I know some of the one thing, I know some of our juvenile costs have gone down. Some of our time that our juveniles are spending, the dollars has gone down slightly. And I know I've heard some others, even in CPMT and on the community policy management team, talking about that judges are trying to some of the judges are trying to get kids more into programs and stuff to, you know, instead of just putting them into a juvenile detention center.
And the budget, though, has gone up.
The budget has gone up.
Yeah, that's what they want. Every time a judge moves a child out of Blue Ridge juvenile detention, it goes into CSA costs, and it costs us.
But you're talking about 70 children, $14,000 in 1 month.
But the thing that you have to understand is that there's so many different disabilities needs that a building is not going to accommodate that. You've got to find out where is the greatest need, where you need that kind of facility. And the only people can address that would have to be your CSA directors.
Sure. You would have to have a very robust.
To be honest with you.
Get together. And you're talking about talking to county.
Just to see what they
discuss what kind of facility. Mm-hmm. But when you think about all the counties, you think, where would you put it? Who's on your board? Louisa, Madison, it's five counties, but the jail. Green County. And Orange. So where would you put it?
Well, we're over in Orange now where it is with the five counties. And that is, you know, about 40 miles over there from here, depending on where you leave from in the mm-hmm. county. But that would be a decision that the five counties would make.
It's worth a discussion. I mean, I agree with what Ms. Booker says, because it's going to be, to me, I think that our best way to lower our CSA costs mm-hmm. is fixing the area at the Abrams building and allowing them to be able to house more individuals there. That keeps us from sending them to Richmond. Right.
But you need the instructions and the
instructors.
You need the staff.
Right.
You need the space. You need the programs.
Right.
And you need a lot of specialized staff.
And you cannot, by state law now, reimburse the school for that service like you can reimburse for a provider for that service. That's one of the things we're trying to get changed. That's what these regional meetings we've been having are focused on, is trying to get the state law changed so that the county and the school system can serve as a source but get reimbursed from CSA funds at a much cheaper cost than sending a child to another type of facility.
Yeah, because we go to Lafayette. Our kids go to Street.
Anytime you talk about going there.
And Lafayette can get reimbursed, though, but the county can't.
You're paying their tuition, but you're not only paying their tuition, you're also paying for an employee to drive a child one-on-one or maybe one-on-two to there, and if they're going to Richmond, they're going to drive them to Richmond, and then they're going to stay there for the next 4 hours because it's cheaper than driving back home and to turn around and drive back.
Well, and even some of the larger costs are children that are autistic or anything like that. The cost for sending them to specialized schools, just because we just don't.
But
Louisiana schools doesn't have the ability to, you know.
To your point, though, Mr. Weaver,
you know, just,
we're
just
spending anywhere from $2.25 to $3.5 million a year.
$3.25 million
a year. I mean, so we got to look at some options. And it's worth a discussion. Maybe they come up with an idea we have.
Frankly, I think you could save several hundred thousand dollars just looking at the figures. You know? And not only will it save the counties, the state, I think they put in about 66% and we put in a third. So it would even save them. And that could be a selling point if we need some legal ramifications to sell them on the point that they could reduce their costs.
And that's what the aim was, that we got some legislators that were on board with that. Ms. Booker, you might have been at the meeting. We had in Charlottesville at the Albemarle County building. We had social services directors, we had county administrators, we had elected officials. That's an ongoing discussion. There's a smaller group that's working on it now, precisely on what Mr. Weaver's talking about being able to centralize some of that and bring it back to the counties rather than paying a provider. But
that's just what's scary. Our bill is $2.25 million or $2.5 million, $3 million this year possibly, and we're 33%.
We keep adding more money. At the end, our budget is not covered.
Because that $3 million doesn't include what we get back.
Where would be the next step? And do you mind if I mention it to a couple board members over there, like Mr. Wade? He's on the jail board.
I said, I think that is the next step.
And I think that's what y'all were saying is that y'all are doing something similar to that.
I think if you connect with Mr. Wade, I'll reconnect with Mr. Goodman on it and see kind of where we are with that, the sub-worker that was working. If it's still going, then we can get you mixed in with that discussion.
I think it would be better for the children.
I'm sitting here because, you know, and maybe I'm too much in the weeds. I'm in the weeds. I'm in there with the kids, the parents. I sit there. I've been there for years. And you got school people sitting back there. And Scribbling has been on some of those things. But you haven't even been as much involved in it, I guess, as the people who, as CPTM people that sit there. And you're talking about the court system. You're talking about Region 10. You're talking about social services. Who else is sitting in there?
Health department.
Health department.
Takes a village.
Yeah. And all these people have their perspective of the needs of those kids. And one building may help. We're going to have to be able to do a needs assessment and find out where is the greatest need and where could that building help. And as you see, SCA has helped a lot to keep kids out of institutions, or they come out of institutions, they make the transition from there, go back, and they're successful. But I'm not stopping you. I'm not saying you shouldn't do that. But I think you're looking at it from one way.
Sure.
And I'm looking down.
And we need to look at it from both ways.
Right. So, I mean, we can pursue that and then see. And they're going to go back and talk to their CSA person.
Sure. We always want to save money, but we don't want to cut the services.
But I would think you'd have better services, would you not?
I don't, because you've got specialized people. You're sending.
Well, you do, but you could use that specialized people in the same billing. Then all of these kids would have quicker access maybe to some of these specialized people if it's all in one big billing, would it not?
Maybe.
I don't know. I'm just throwing it out.
Well, I was just going to mention one thing. I didn't know if y'all were aware of it.
We gotta hear it.
Okay. Come on, Cam.
God love you, dear, but we gotta get it on the speaker.
Oh, I didn't
speaker.
See you over there, Cam.
That's okay. Actually, 7 years ago, a group got together because a Blue Ridge Detention Center said, since the number of kids is being drastically reduced, there's not near as many kids in the detention center because the laws have changed and it's a lot harder to detain kids now. And so they were trying to figure out a way they could use that extra space. And they actually put together a group, and I participated on that group, Ms. Muir and I. And we talked about, and we met a few times, about using that space to make a diagnostic and assessment center for kids, which is basically like a 30 or 60-day program where kids can go have a really thorough kind of inpatient assessment to determine what kind of services or placement they needed. And I think, from my recollection, it was a person from Charlottesville Social Services and a person from Blue Ridge Detention Center that was sort of heading that up. And then when the worker in Parente from Charlottesville Social Services, she actually left to go to be the program manager for the state for foster care, I think it just kind of fizzled. But I mean, that might be something worth exploring, or
how do you feel about
willing
something
to
like
pick
that
it back up.
How do you feel that maybe the success of something like this might be? Pros and cons.
Well, I think Ms. Booker made a really good point in that these youth have so many different types of disabilities and different types of needs. it's hard to treat all of that in one building, and I think probably expanding Abrams, because if you look at the children that are placed in residential facilities, the majority of them are with other agencies, and there is so many school placements. And I think that's the majority of it, and I think expanding Abrams would help that, and it would keep those kids local.
And I completely agree with Ms. May. The problem is that if you put a child in ongoing supportive area, and I want treatment's probably too strong a word, but supportive environment in Abrams, you pay for 100% of it, because we can't get reimbursed from the state from CSA dollars if we're the treatment provider. That's a problem with the state law now. That's one of the things we're trying to get changed. So it'd be great if we could do stuff local and bring it in-house and hire two or three psychologists for the schools and do it a heck of a lot cheaper than we could by sending them to a private institution out there. The problem is you would have to do it completely out of Savannah taxpayer dollars, because you wouldn't get reimbursed from the state. If we can get the state law changed so that CSA still reimburses, if we're the provider of it, that would be fantastic. And to Ms. May's point, that'd be great if there was juvenile detention could do it. And 7 years ago, that was the case. But I was on the board, the authority, for the last 4 years, and then Eric for the last 2 years, and he's the last 2 years. And they don't have the same bed space now they had 7 years ago. They filled it up with kids from a program. I can't even remember the name of the program, but that Richmond sends there. But they still are interested in partnering to help take care of kids and do programs with kids. So this group that's been meeting, we can connect Mr. Weaver with and talk about it.
And the other thing is, a lot of our children have problems because it's a home problem. It's a family problem. It's drugs. It is just so consuming that these problems are adult problems. These children have problems because of adults. A lot of them. Now, we can take out 75, and we have 75 kids now with services, and Mr. Mueller could put them in categories and actually, without names, just numbers, and show you exactly what you're dealing with. Counseling, are you dealing with drug abuse? Is it something else where you can, then you begin to look at where are the greatest needs and how can. And in the community, I mean, we've got the sheriff that's working with drugs. It's an all-consuming kind of thing in order. And I don't even think the community is aware a lot of times of the drug use and how it's affecting our children.
Moselle, you
I'm passionate really, about
right, you
this.
You should have head this up, because you are.
I know, but I'm not that community. Yeah, I'd love to be involved, but you know, we've been wrestling with this a lot. I mean, you probably have more kids foster care now than.
But wouldn't it
usual,
be
usual more kids in foster?
Moselle,
care?
Wouldn't it be better to have this certain group that has the same problem together?
Oh, sure.
With the prospects of maybe moving to other areas and. And I think you get more use out of your instructors.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not against it. I mean, go ahead and do what.
Well, but you know probably more about that than I ever will.
CPTM, and we have a director. Brian is excellent. He knows. I mean, he would be a good to be in that kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Be amazing to hear some of the situations
yeah,
we deal with
every day. Because, you know, a lot of us, we don't see it, really.
If there's anything we can do to bring better help to the kids, and, you know, the school starting off, they recognize the needs of children early. Sometimes their hands are tied, because we don't have very much control over what the parents should be
sure.
doing.
Well, you'd be surprised how many of them we have who don't have a parent there anymore because of the drug situation. And when you deal with that every day, it takes a toll.
All right.
But yes, I mean,
yeah. Okay.
Without a doubt, have a conversation, and then Mr. Nichols, if you'll join him in with the others. And
I got a feeling, Ms. Maeve, you can move because I think Mr. Dahl is going back into the hot seat. We haven't made it to P yet.
Mr. Weaver only gets one topic a night, that's it.
Well, it's unfortunately, O and P are the same topic. It's okay. Different months.
No problem.
Go ahead, Mr. Weaver.
Let's look at P, number 376. It's pretty elementary, but it's sort of curious. There's a stump there that you removed, $2,800. I'm just sort of curious how they would come up with that.
Big stump?
They removed the stump.
That's cheap.
Yeah, I mean, that.
Let me see. Where is that?
It's 376 under P.
Oh, I see.
You know, that was at Civil War Apartment.
Again, it's a list of items that the tree company did for us. And you only see
the first of
that list.
So we just have part of it here.
Like so many of these other line items, where you only see part of what was done on this list.
This was one
we cut down the tree, and they removed the stump. And the stump was probably all you're seeing there.
But then you cut the tree down, cut it up, remove it, and then remove the stump.
Yeah. If it was the pine that was in Civil War Park, it was massive.
That was about it. That pine was like that.
I mean, tall.
I'd like to have a table made out of that pine. Anything else, Mr. Weaver?
No, that was the only thing. So, if you want me to make the motion?
I think Ms. Eager got one.
I've got a question under Q. It says that they're under fiscal
impact. Officer Hill? Cap?
Yes, sir. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
Good evening,
sir.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Under the fiscal impact, it says no local new funding required. And then on the project budget, it says that there's a local match.
$27,382.
Not the
first year.
That's for next year.
So this is an in-kind match, and because it's an in-kind match, that means that it's a value of non-cash property. So it could be labor, it could be space, it could be vehicles, it could be equipment, IT technology. Any of those different types of things that we can place a value on would qualify for that amount that you see that's there for in-kind dollars. That's a change in this grant as opposed to the previous grant. The previous grant that we submitted for, that you remember came to you in May, Fluvanna County did not get awarded that grant. There were no technical issues with our grant application. They simply didn't have enough money to fund all the grants that they received.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so at that time, if you'll recall, there was a $1.26 million grant monies available throughout the state. They received about $8.4 million in requests. Because of that, in July, they reissued the grant, and they come up with a new grant for the fall it's $1.3 million. In the new grant, they made some constructive changes to the grant. And so the numbers that you see will reflect differently than they did before, and this is why they reflect differently. First of all, they changed the amount of the grant to $70,000 of funding for localities. Initially, it was $50,000. And the grant match initially was dollars that we had to provide out of our budgets. And at that time, we had an agreement with the sheriff's office and the schools that we would ensure that we would make sure that we had that money available to cover the match. They decided that that may have been just a little bit too difficult for localities to be in the middle of their budget cycles to do those kinds of things. And so they made it in-kind match dollars, which makes it much easier for us to be able to qualify and provide that monetary value to the grant dollars. And it also provides the locality more dollars out of the grant. So in this grant, you'll see that we will qualify for up to $42,000, as opposed to previously it was about $25,000. So we can actually pay for more of the position with this particular grant.
So are we asking for how many more SROs? We have two now?
We currently have two. And we're asking for one additional.
This
particular grant, the Granting Authority Department of Criminal Justice Services is focusing on middle and high schools for this additional for the additional grant dollars for SROs. And so, of course, we can show the need based upon our service availability with middle and high school with our current two SROs and them filtering down into the elementary schools providing prevention and character education. Currently, with this grant and our submission, with those dollars, we would be funded for up to 12 months, and we could augment the time lapses that occur when SROs are in the elementary schools or dealing with other matters and other things need their attention.
Okay. Do we have teachers trained if there is a shooter, someone who comes in the school? Do you have a group of teachers trained? I know, Kim, my daughter's in Williamsburg, and she's one of the team that's trained to know what to do and how to take care of her wing if anything should happen.
The school safety planning team meets with, the sheriff's office participates with the schools and all of the individuals, schools, administration, to address those types of things. And we meet monthly to discuss the responses that the school has to crime and to safety in the schools when incidents occur that are of crisis. And so that includes helping with crisis management planning, school safety assessments and surveys. All of those things are addressed during those meetings and are in constant collaboration between the sheriff's office and the schools to ensure safety. And so all the teachers are prepped with that information every single year. Prior to the start of the school year, in all of their orientations, they get all of our crisis management planning. If it's continued crisis management planning, they get that and any modifications thereof.
Hasn't there been some pushback sometimes where their arms might be carried by the teachers?
You know, I've heard some teachers ask, I think there's a lot of curiosity about whether or not firearms and teachers having them is appropriate in the school environment. There's a lot of talk about that. And simply, it's just fear of the unknown. We all want to be as prepared as we possibly can to protect our biggest soft target in our communities, and that's our children, and specifically in schools during the day when they're less of their parents and caregivers are available, and the county's resources are responsible for providing that security.
Is that good or bad?
Well, I think it's good that there's a conversation. I think it's good considering the current climate of our nation, the current climate of our communities, and the current status of our children, that we are constantly looking at and trying to figure out how we're going to satisfy the need of taking care of them, and in the very best possible way. So I think it's a great conversation.
Here's one thing I would love. We just finished a week of meetings prior to school. I would love to see us, at some point in time, and I've brought this up before, have a voluntary training where you guys come in and train us how to assist a resource officer.
Oh, absolutely.
I won't say hand me a weapon. I'm not going to say that. But if a teacher is willing to volunteer to be trained, because heaven forbid somebody runs into one of these schools and starts shooting, that resource officer is going to be on their own for at least 5 minutes.
Oh, absolutely.
And at least, you know, we can run down the hall and possibly assist in some shape or manner. I'd just love for us to work that in. You knew I was going to say that, Mr. Winkler.
It's interesting. We have a 924 staff day, and that's one of our plans is to work with that. A very similar
task. It's something that I've talked to the sheriff about. Y'all have the reserved officers.
Yeah,
y'all need additional help at what times? The holidays and the summer?
It's always that crime is always on the increase. When it's warmer, and when people are more available, so evenings, weekends, holidays, and typically during the summer. Now, for our schools, of course, that's when schools are not in session and they're out in our community. But I want to make sure I get this in as well as another mechanism that we use to deal with safety in our schools. As you are very well aware, we just recently, over the last couple of years, developed the radio project for the county. In that radio project, we came up with these really nice radios that go into each one of the schools. Each of the schools has a school-safe radio, and that radio has what we call an emergency button on that radio. It was a big orange button that when they hit that button at the school, it instantly gives them airway access, and they can begin explaining what their issue is at that site. Of course, all of that alerts every radio that's attached to that system for law enforcement first response in the county. It will alert all those radios and all the consoles in the sheriff's office at the 911 center. At that point in time, of course, there are already plans in place at the school to deal with lockdowns. You may have heard of Code Blue. You may have heard of Code Orange. If there's any type of suspicious person on the school campus, suspicious person in the school building, any type of active or dynamic environment that's going on where there's some shooting or there's an injury or what have you, the school is already programmed to go into that lockdown phase. And certainly, we want to have as many resources as we possibly can protect and take care of our children. And in that instance, all of the staff that the school has is dedicated to those functions. And those are specifically the best functions for them at that time. Now, if there are other people who are available who could come out and support our initiative and help us continue to protect people that are there and regulate the environment, then we certainly want that. For that reason, we have our Reserve Deputy Academy that will be starting on September the 11th. And that academy, we're going to do the very same thing that we did in the past, and we're going to train people how to be law enforcement officers and certify them if they pass our test to be law enforcement officers for Fluvanna County. That is a direct asset to the county that is free of additional dollars for salaries and puts real people to work in Fluvanna. And so that means that we'll also put real work available for our schools as well, protecting those children.
I have chuckled because I have a button in my office.
Oh, absolutely.
And my secretary had a button on the wall.
What happens?
That's great.
What happens when the grant's gone?
So in this grant, we have to be able to come up with a sustainment plan. And of course, I presented a sustainment plan in the previous grant and a sustainment plan in this current grant. Certainly, if we are not afforded this grant, we're going to hopefully be able to come back to you and show you the real data of how credible this program is, what this program has done to sustain a safe environment in our schools and protect children and staff and citizens alike. And we're going to likely ask you to help us fund the program, to fund that additional office.
Don't forget to tell us where we can get the money.
We're
going to come to you with ideas.
And the other thing, Captain, is you have to emphasize that the resource officer also teaches.
Most definitely.
And he teaches kids about the law, how to stay out of trouble, so that's a real key thing for our children to understand how the law works and crime doesn't pay, drug and all that type of stuff. So that's a good thing that they do as well, do they not?
Absolutely they do. Our resource officers and myself alike are all trained by the Attorney General's office and certified to teach Virginia law to teens, parents, and the community. In that program, we teach a variety of curriculum to all of the schools, that all the school staff and students, as well as our community private partners as well, from every aspect of crime, drugs, sexual assaults, driving, you name it. There's a curriculum that we have for it, and we present them regularly. As well as, if you'll recall, we came to you and told you that we wanted to develop the Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program. And we did roll that out over this past year, as we promised you. And last year, we put that core program in the fourth grade, and our SROs taught that program all the year. And as of this coming Monday, August the 20th, that program starts out again in Carisbrook Elementary School. And our SROs are teaching that program.
You can bring some of their parents.
And so it would be great if we could. But they are definitely law-related educators. That's their primary function in the school. Their primary function in the school is not a law enforcement officer.
Right.
Their primary function is as a law-related educator. And when it is needed for them to be reactive in the capacity of a law enforcement officer, they can be. But their primary goal is proactive in the school environment, and they're constantly educating.
And I'd say that the second best thing that they do is provide a positive influence in these children's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Officer Steph is always wandering around that school. He's always being seen. He's talking to the kids. Officer Kozan is there every day when we have lunch. And
and they're just being positive role models, and they see police officers in a totally different aspect, because so many times they're taught they're the bad guys,
right.
And they're not. They're the protective, and they that's the part that I really enjoy seeing, is watching them interact with the kids. Thank you very much, Officer Hill. Any other questions? That's the longest consent agenda we've ever had. All right. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we approve the consent agenda, which are the minutes of August 1st, 18, school resource officer policy, the employee learn and earn program, and the accounts payable and the payroll of item O is $2,261,918.47. And item P, the accounts payable and the payroll is $5,953,533.94.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. Is there any unfinished business? Okay, hearing none, we'll move forward with new business. Mileage for citizens doing county business. I'm guessing Mr. Nichols has something put together that he wants to show us.
Well, Mrs. Booker's asked about this a couple times. You've never explicitly told folks, if they're on a board, commission, or committee, that they can get paid for their mileage. You've never explicitly said they can't either. In some cases, people have asked or that we've offered for that. There are a number of boards, commissions, and committees that you appoint people to. On the screen as it pops up here, all these ones that are in down the left-hand side, these are boards, commissions, and committees that you appoint citizens or board members to. The ones in bold involve meetings outside of the county. And there are, like for instance, for CBRJ, it's 12 meetings a year. Generally, one member would be eligible for reimbursement. Because the sheriff would normally take his own vehicle, or if the county staff member, like myself, was on before, I'd take my own vehicle, not reimbursable. But if Mr. Weaver drove himself, it would be reimbursable, or another citizen representative. So if you did 12 meetings a year, and I just use distances from Palmyra, that's what the cost reimbursement would be for a year. And you can see some of the other ones down here for the various boards, commissions, and committees. Mr. Payne has the state code language pulled up that you're authorized to do that and to pay it. And there are some of these boards where their statutes, the state statutes that authorize them to have that board or require them to have the board, authorize reimbursement of members for mileage and incidental expenses and the like. Just a rough ballpark estimate, if all of these members you appointed to the commissions and boards and committees, that they have to travel outside of the county and they ask for reimbursement of mileage, it'd be around $5,000 a year. So it's not huge dollars, but it may be important to that individual.
Yeah.
We've just never done it in the past.
Yeah, and why I brought it up, I mean, I have been, I'm on the Java board, I think, ever since I've been, as I said, 11 years, and I go twice, most times twice a month. I was on the, and then the RRBC, I went, and I ended up on the executive board because our other board member never attended any of the meetings. So I took his responsibility and I did as my service as executive and on the regular board. So I never put in for mileage until after 6 years I'd been on the board. And then I think, Mr. Nichols, Ms. White, you're not putting in for mileage. So I started putting in mileage about 4 years ago. And I put in for JABA this time, and Steve Carty said, well, you know, we can't pay your mileage because we don't pay the other people who go to town. So that was like $200 and some was that
off.
So I don't mind giving, but I don't think I want to give that much back to the county. You know, you don't.
I think if you're representing the county, you should be reimbursed.
Yeah, but
that's.
But that's.
There are some bodies of law about how you reimburse. One of the questions that we addressed some time ago, Mr. Nichols gave me a memorandum, a copy of a memorandum that I wrote that doesn't have a date on it. deals with there may be a difference between supervisors and others.
Right.
Because supervisors are already paid.
Big money.
For well, you're already paid for your service to the county. The question is whether what you're doing is in your capacity as a supervisor. But the general statute, just so we can get it in the record, general statute is 15.2-1508.1, which generally authorizes the county to reimburse people, and it's pretty much anybody, traveling on the business of the locality. There are some exceptions for people that are partly reimbursed by the Commonwealth and various things like that, but that's the general authority for that.
And if, for instance, the board wanted to do this, we would just start incorporating specific language into appointment letters, just letting them know that because you are traveling to a board, commissioner, committee outside of the county, you are eligible for personal mileage reimbursement from your home to that meeting and return, and you can file the travel claims using these forms, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, it would be fairly easy to do, but there is a cost to it. I think it is the cost of doing business, and it's reasonable, it's fair. It just hasn't been done before.
Yeah, a lot of people may make the choice not even to apply.
For 6 years. And I'll turn them in every once in a while. Other times I forget.
We screen those carefully to make sure you all don't get in trouble by having some things on there that maybe don't match up or aren't appropriate.
Right.
But with the citizens, we would do the same. We just want to make sure that if they're going to meetings in Charlottesville, that we'd do something.
What do you think?
If you wanted to.
I think that's fine. I don't know that everybody would.
Right.
Not everybody's going to do it, but even if everybody did do it, it cost us $5,000 less. And I think that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and it may be a little less than that, a little more. Yeah. Some are probably not going to claim. That's based on 54 and a half cents, and that's based on from Palmyra. You know, somebody lived in Scottsville and went to.
Or Bremo. Somebody goes from Bremo to Charlottesville.
Yeah, it's different. But I mean, it's all going to balance out. It's around $4,000 or $5,000. It wouldn't be a huge amount, but. And I agree that some would just not put it in.
It's strictly for travel outside the county.
Yes. Yeah. Now, it's not that we haven't, for instance, if we sent the community volunteer coordinator to a conference in Roanoke, a day conference in Roanoke, we asked them to go down there, we'll pay their mileage, and we would pay reasonable expenses, like the registration fee for that part of the volunteer conference or whatever. We would do the same for other board members that are on boards, commissions, and committees. When the planning commission members go to training that's mandatory, they're paid for that travel and trip, just like anybody else would be. So we have the ability to pay for registrations or mileage or even in some cases meals if we needed to. But you're going to get a whole brand new travel and business expense instruction here. Shortly, I'm just vetting it through the constitutional officer and department heads now, but it'll be completely revised from what we've been doing. It'll be based on per diem, kind of like the rest of the world's done for the last 25 years. Mm-hmm. But it'll be much easier, but it's simpler for everyone to use and do, but so we can use that the same way for these members.
Huh. All righty.
Depends on whether he wants to pursue it or not.
Does this sound like a good idea, Mr. Weaver?
I think it's all right.
We got the okay.
We'll just incorporate it into our, because the legal language is already there, we'll just incorporate it into our appointments, and we'll get everybody caught up. So, thank you.
All righty. I butchered this the last time. We will now move to our second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Seeing no one, I'll now close the second round of public comments. Do we have a close? I don't think we do. Thank the Lord. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Go ahead. All right. We got a motion by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are. Thank the Lord. We're going home before 10 o'clock. I